Oh, ho, holy cow. Look at that snow out there. How you doing, Chicago? It's me, Frank Fontana. Thanks for hanging out with us.
I thought Santa was in the studio.
He was. He came in, he left, he gave a little ho-ho, and had a go. Yeah, man. No, this is beautiful.
It's beginning to look a lot like winter.
Oh, it feels like it. It looks like it. I'm digging it, though, because we're inside our warm Allstate studio here on WGN Radio 720. We'll be here till 3 o'clock, hanging out with you folks listening. How are you all faring out there? It was a decent ride in. Did you have any trouble getting in?
No, not at all. But look, it's starting to accumulate right now.
It is. I mean, out in the suburbs where you and I are based out of, in the same neck of the woods, the side streets were okay. There was some good accumulation, some good snowball throwing snow. That's nice. You could pack it nicely. It's nice and fluffy.
Yes, it's perfect for the pets, especially. It's still not dangerous for the pets.
Yeah.
You know, Frank, the National Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning, which is now in effect until Monday, which is a potential for significant snow, sleet, or ice accumulations that may impact travel. So if you don't need to leave your home, just put up the radio, and that's all you
don't
need to do.
Put on the radio and hang out with us for the next couple hours. And you know what? If you are driving around, you're listening to us on the radio, and you see a trouble spot that we're not talking about, you can always call or pull over and text us at 312-981-7200. We'll share the news and keep people safe from going out that way. We have a great show today, by the way, a good Sunday snow day show, because we're talking all about creating the perfect Christmas tree. And I know everybody's tree is individual, and it's perfect for you, right, that you design it. But, you know, there is a general rule of thumb out there, and there is a great debate going on, real versus artificial.
Yes, it
depends.
What are
you, Dave? I don't mean your personality. I mean your tree.
I would love a real Christmas tree because it's more eco-friendly, but it's high maintenance.
Is it really, though?
I like
the smell.
Because
you're cutting down a tree, and a tree helps, transfer, oxygen.
So
is it really?
Well, what I mean is, like, when you have it in your house, it's recycling. It's fresher air. It smells good. Yeah. The only thing that it's high maintenance because of the little pines that could become like needles.
If you got kids and pets, it's interesting. We have a recycled plastic Christmas tree. So we are kind of eco-friendly in that sense, but we definitely keep it artificial because it's just easier, I think, for us.
There's pros and cons because the real Christmas trees, well, it's not as eco-friendly, like you say, because you have to cut down trees, but the trees that you use every year, they also collect dust, they collect all these things that could not be healthy.
This is true. There's a great debate. That's why I say it. There's a great debate, and we're going to be talking about that and creating the perfect Christmas tree if you have a real one. Sean Kinzett, I believe that's the right way I'm saying it, certified arborist and manager at the Davy Tree Expert Company, is joining me to discuss this great debate and chime in on it, as well as give some tips on 7 ways how to recycle your Christmas tree. Apparently, each year, 93% of your Christmas trees are recycled and turned into mulch for landscape. That's a good thing.
Yeah, in the newsroom after Christmas, we get calls. Maybe once, twice a week that I have to answer the phone asking, where can I recycle my Christmas tree, or how can I recycle my Christmas tree? So here we have it.
Then we'll also be talking about some unique DIY gifts. And WGN's very own sports anchor, Andy Mazur, is joining us. Because you may or may not know this about Andy, but he is a top-notch photographer. And he's bringing in some of his work. And we're going to talk about the world of photography. If you're interested in becoming one or want to just be an amateur and take some great photos, Andy's going to share some tips, as well as why a personal photo is a great holiday gift. And then our favorite doctor, renowned Chicago cardiologist, Dr. Oakner, is joining us later in the show to talk about the stress of the holidays and what it could do to your body. And then, we all are doing it. I'm doing it right now. We're packing on those winter holiday pounds. Dave?
My God, the pork, the tamales.
You just can't help yourself.
Desserts, especially around this time. When it gets cold, I eat more desserts for some reason. I think everybody's like that, no?
I think it's a rule of thumb. Everyone's going to, unless you're just a diehard, workout fiend with a crazy metabolism, everybody overeats slightly during the holiday. And the stress level, is huge.
Yes. Yeah.
So Dr. Oakner's joining us for that to talk about some ways on how to combat that, not get too crazy. I mean, a little flexibility is okay. But, this is a really critical time for people who struggle with weight loss and stress and depression. So he has some really good tips on how to combat all that stuff. if you text us in, and we're already getting some beautiful pictures here of Christmas trees all over the Chicagoland area, 312-981-7200, text us a picture of your Christmas tree. If you think it is the most amazing tree, we want to see it, because Dave and I will be judging and giving away a prize at the end of this. And Dave, you will be the final answer on this.
You know what? And we have a tree expert here as well. So
that's right. As a matter of fact, we're going to expand our judging panel like American Idol. And the Simon Cowell of this group, Sean Kingsett, is...
Simon Cowell.
But you could be in this playful little holiday gig we're doing right now. Sean is joining us from the Davey Tree Expert Company. Thanks for joining us, Sean.
Oh, my pleasure.
We're running the contest right now, and we're getting tons and tons of... Are you able to see it on your text?
I'm not able to see them, no.
Okay, here, let me share my text board with you here. I could just flip this around.
All righty.
Take a look at some of those. Keep those coming in.
Nice.
We'll be sifting
that's
through.
That's a beautiful one.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying they like real trees. Now, you guys are all about real trees, right?
We would favor... an arborist would favor a real tree, but I got to be honest. I have one real tree. I have two trees in my house, and one's real and one is artificial.
Well, that's good. You split the difference.
Yeah.
Make everybody happy.
The one in the basement, the needles and the watering, and I just
so
for make
even,
a big
even
mess.
You will admit that it is
there
a,
are definite
a
benefits
process.
To an artificial tree.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the way I feel, and it's partial laziness. But, you know, this is a big debate. You know, people get real serious about this. Midwest Home actually wrote an article on this topic about real versus, you know, imposter trees, they're calling it, like it's some kind of like sin to have an imposter tree. They're obviously pro-real in this, and they're saying some of the advantages of real trees are the scent. And, you know, yes, you can have pine-scented candles, but there's nothing like the real thing. Do you agree with this?
Well, yeah. No, I mean, it's just a smell of the season, right? I mean, a lot of our memories are built by... that, you know, smelling the eggnog or whatever it is,
yeah.
and the evergreen tree definitely stimulates that sense, and it definitely reminds, you know, I have a fir tree and I love it. It reminds me of Christmas. I come in the house and it just feels good to smell that smell.
Yeah, I agree with you there. How about the fact that they claim it they don't collect dust? Now, every surface, regardless of living or not, plants collect dust. Is this true?
Yeah, they're going to come in from the fields that they were grown in, and they're going to have stuff in them.
Right.
So there's a mess associated with this. But, you know, by the end of the holidays, I'm kind of ready to clean up and pack up and tidy up. You know, I think after the new year, everyone likes to kind of get things in order, right?
Yeah. we're quick to put ours up in our house, but we're also quick to take them down.
Quick to take it down, that's right.
Yeah, it's like when we're done, we're done.
Some people leave it up, you know, until Valentine's Day or whatever.
Which brings up a good point. Sean, what's your feeling on exterior lights? Like, what do you in your neighborhood, do you have the family that leaves them on until, like, next Christmas?
Yeah, I love the family. I just heard of a house that had all seasons. You know, I had Thanksgiving, it had Halloween, it had all the seasons, Easter up at one time. I'm one of those firm believers. Take it down, you know, move on to the next
right.
holiday.
What's a suitable, in your opinion, a suitable time frame for somebody to leave their Christmas tree and lights up? Like, what?
You know, I think till short, you know, what
after.
Is it? Well, by the religious celebration, what is it? Is it the Epiphany? I can't remember. There's the when the three wise men come or whatever.
Yeah.
By religious followings, I would say after the Epiphany.
After the guys stop by.
Yeah, after
have
the
drinks.
Three wise men say hang out and say hi. Then,
shots of eggnog.
then move on.
Pack
then
that
Christmas
tree up.
Is done.
right. Take that tree with you, would you wise guys?
I think there's a safety and a mess issue there a little bit too. You know, a Christmas tree is kind of like a flower. You know, it's like a carnation or a rose. It's a cut flower in
essence. It's going to die eventually.
It's going to die
right?
and dry out and at some point become a fire hazard. So, you know, the key to safety is cut the end of that tree when you get it, that, you know, that Christmas tree, cut the bottom off and get it into water as quickly as possible, because that'll cause it to absorb more water. The more water it absorbs while it's in your home, the less mess you're going to have and the less it's going to dry out and become a safety concern.
Good tip there. We got lots of texts coming in with amazing looking Christmas trees. Keep them coming. 312-981-7200. I'm just enjoying looking at these, Dave.
You know what? Since we have two prizes, we're going to have to give one out to a wall Christmas tree, because the people in condos, they say they have to make their own.
Did you see one come in?
There's one made out of Michigan birch trees.
Ooh.
And this texter is saying when you live in a condo, you really don't have room for a regular tree. So we're going to give a prize out to a wall tree and a regular tree.
I have not heard of that before.
So we picked one already?
Well, so far,
these are our front runners.
Yeah.
So let's categorize them then by condo-related trees. And then we'll have, you know, big home, because we were seeing some really big home trees, which are super cool. Although I do dig this birch tree.
Traditional. Do one traditional and one innovative.
Thank you,
unique
Simon.
Tree.
There
Thank
you go.
Simon
See,
Carroll.
That's where we have a tree expert here.
Exactly. All right, so talk to us. You guys say that there are, quote-unquote, best trees for Chicago homes. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, it kind of depends on your style or your taste. Some are going to be softer. You mentioned the scent. Some people are allergic, you know, or they're sensitive,
oh, really?
and they have problems with the odor of the evergreen. So then you'd want to go with a white pine because it has less scent than others. Something like a Fraser fir is very compact and gives you a lot of branches to hang things from. A Scotch pine has kind of a bluish tinge to it. So there's a lot of different characteristics that they have.
And with that said, do you find people who look for the thinner base tree that has like less of a bushy effect, or is everyone looking for the fullness?
I think most people like the Fraser fir the fir trees because they're very compact. Colorado blue spruce with the color and compact. But some people want a more open tree, not so dense, something that they can get things hung on the inner part more, or even a more softer, delicate. The pines are more softer and delicate looking.
Now, you guys sell trees, right?
We actually do not sell. We're Davy Tree is a commercial residential tree care company. We help people take care of trees, but we by our knowledge, we have an understanding of Christmas trees. And
I like it. So this is an unsolicited opinion on the
good
matter.
Advice, yeah.
This is good, clean advice.
That's right.
I like it. We just got a beautiful photo of a Christmas tree came in from the 224. It looks like it's on either the front lawn, or if it is, this looks like it could be in a town hall somewhere.
I have to say, that looks like the Millennium Park tree.
Is it? Okay, because it's stunning.
It's huge.
Yeah, that would be that's quite impressive.
I was going to say, that wouldn't fit in anyone's home
that
I know,
more professional than...
Yeah, that could be a professional tree. And we got some texts coming in saying, real trees are grown in Christmas tree nurseries. Christmas tree nurseries are actually good for the environment, and by buying a tree, you are helping.
It's an ecosystem. You know, it's out in a habitat that's suitable for conifers, and so it's better to have that land being used to grow something versus a subdivision or a parking lot or some of the other things. And because the trees are of different ages and sizes and a lot of birds and different things, they like the cover that an evergreen provides. So by having a Christmas tree farm, there's actually some ecological benefits, much better than using a petroleum to make the plastic and the needles, and you're using oil and you're shipping it from China. And oftentimes they're grown local.
Yeah,
so
the carbon footprint of it alone
is less.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because of the recycling, you're not using up that carbon. You're usually going to mulch it or something like that. So the carbon, just because you're you're getting rid of it, doesn't mean you're wasting the carbon that's in there. It's usually getting recycled more quickly than an artificial tree would be.
We're talking about Christmas trees, and it seems like, you know, there's a certain nostalgia to real trees that people love, and it's okay. I mean, who are we to judge if you have a fake one or a real one? I have a fake one. It doesn't, you know, as long as I at least try to get kind of the eco-friendly versions of
the recycled.
That's
neat, too.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do it, at least go that way. But if you do have a real tree, we were talking off mic about some of the cool ways to, like, recycle the tree, and maybe there's a tree you even buy that can get planted afterwards, right?
Yeah, no, one of the neatest things I've ever heard of is you picking out a tree, a bald and burlap tree that you'd buy from a nursery, and you'd plant it like any other tree. And you have in mind, you keep it outside until you're ready, and then you bring it in, you keep the what's called the root ball or the ball and burlap a little bit wet just so that the ball doesn't dry out. And then you have to have your hole pre-dug, but you then basically plant that tree in your yard after the season is over.
Brilliant.
So then you're not getting rid of the tree. There's some risk there because it's stressful to the tree because it wants to come out of dormancy because it's inside and it's warm.
Yeah.
So you're bringing it, you know, inside, it comes out of dormancy, you put it back outside, just kind of zapping it by hitting it by the cold. So
what
there's
kind
some
of tree
stress
is that called again?
Well, any tree, a white fir would be one that I could think of that would probably tolerate. Douglas fir would be another one.
Needs to be a tough tree.
Those don't lose a lot of water out. Evergreens don't lose a lot of water out of their needles. That's why they have needles instead of leaves, because in the winter months, they have their needle all winter long. So they don't, because they're small and thin, they don't lose as much water. It helps them deal with winter better. nature.
Nature's fascinating.
Nature is amazing, how things have adapted to living in different environments.
Certainly. So. And one of our texters from the 847 said, please ask listeners to put real trees in the backyard because and lean them against the fence after Christmas. The birds take refuge in them all winter long. And then when the spring comes along, you can just burn them up in the backyard in the fire pit.
That's a great advice. You can actually take like suet. You can then hang bird food from there. Have the kids make suet bird food.
Yeah.
And then hang those things, or the peanut butter ones or whatever, and the cardinals.
Oh,
and just look online. They have different little recipes for making bird food for birds, and hang that from your Christmas tree in your backyard all winter. Then the birds will come to your Christmas tree.
Some of the other things, like you could just basically put them on the curb for mulch.
You could do that. Check with your community to see if they recycle them. If they chip them. So oftentimes they'll have like a dump site. So you have to check with your community, and then you have a dump site, and then they'll chip them and make mulch out of them.
That's a great way to recycle.
In the late winter. That's one way to recycle. Another is find out if your Boy Scouts will take them. Sometimes you give a donation and the Boy Scouts will come pick them up.
Nice. What do they do with them?
They do the same thing.
They whittle stuff out of wood.
Another is actually crafting. You say that, but put them in your flower pots. If you have flower pots that you leave out, you often see high end landscapes where they'll put greens in pots and stuff. You can do that too. I actually do that with the bottom greens. I cut off some of the lower branches from my live tree, and then we stick those out in flower pots with other, birch logs or whatever, and they can stay all year. They don't just have to be for Christmas.
It's fantastic. Let's hear from Ann. Ann, thanks for calling the show.
Hey, Ann, how are you?
Good. I have a story to tell you about what actually happened. We used to always have a live Christmas tree, and the lower branches my dad would cut off. I'd take down to the barn to my horse's stall because they smell so good. And when we would get done with the tree, and we'd keep it in wet sand for the whole time, probably about 2 weeks that we just keep wetting the sand with water. And then when the tree, at the end of the Christmas season, my dad would take the tree, trim the branches off of it, and use it for a tomato pole.
Oh, interesting.
So, very ingenious.
So we basically recycled before, and he died at 80, and I'm 74, so it had to be at least 80 years ago, if not longer.
So you guys were recycling before it was even cool to recycle.
Before it was hip, yeah.
You got it.
Now, do you still do that today? Do you still use the branches for your tomato poles?
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
That's great, Ann. That's an awesome story.
Way to carry on the tradition.
We use the trunk of the tree. We cut the branches off. The whole tree, the dried branches, and then use the actual part of the tree that was the part that the branches would come off of.
Yeah, the trunk. You'd use the trunk.
Trunk part.
Yeah. Very good.
That's great stuff, man. Thank you so much for the call. Have a happy holiday.
You also. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Awesome. I love to hear stuff like that. Good tips from our listeners. So what else do you got for us?
Well, the other thing is, let's talk about real trees. The winter months, people kind of forget about the outside. They get so locked in they kind of get inside and don't think about the outside until the spring. And winter is a great time to actually have trees inspected.
Now you're talking about your dreams, your
landscape.
Your landscape.
Your
forget
maples,
about
your
Christmas
elms.
Trees at this moment.
We can talk about Christmas trees
I think
more,
it's really important because you do. I'm like that too. Like once it's cold and snowing, I don't want to even
We shut down.
I shut down. Like it's enough because we know we're going to have a long road ahead of us.
Yeah.
So to even begin to worry about it. But if you appreciate your landscape, there is some things you should do.
Yeah,
right?
We worry about these winter storms, the ice and the snow and the wind and everything else, and you can get damage in the winter months. And so by having a certified arborist inspect your tree in the winter, you can have that tree checked out, make sure that there isn't defects in it that are going to put it at risk of breaking.
How does that work? Do people just call you up at Davian and they're like, we need a tree expert to come out?
That's right.
Do you get those calls a lot?
Oh, yeah, all the time. That's
really?
How we survive as a business.
It's fascinating.
And there's a sanction body. It's called the International Society of Arboriculture. And you take a test, and it's called a certified arborist test. And that sort of helps ensure that the person that is looking at your tree has a base level of knowledge about trees and how they work. And just like doctors, there's obviously varying levels of experience and expertise in what they look at. But a certified arborist is a great way for a homeowner to know that the person in front of them has some knowledge about trees.
So, all right, you go out there and you're kind of like a doctor on call.
Sure.
You show up with your mask and your little doctor kit, and you analyze the tree for its health. And what happens when, I mean, do you have to ever have to deliver bad news? You're like, you know, I don't know if your tree's going to make it, ma'am.
All the time, unfortunately.
Really? How do people react generally?
Sometimes you really have to kind of show them what you're looking at and what the problem is. Well, a great example would be emerald ash borer, Dutch elm disease. These are problems like people are loosely aware of them. They're aware that these are epidemic tree problems that have been out there before or are recent. And so they don't maybe know the symptoms or whatever. So then you're looking at their tree. They love their tree, and you got to tell them, I'm sorry, it's too late. It's not going to make it, man.
Do you hug them afterwards? I mean, do you console
Sometimes
them
you do what you got to do to help
them. Give
them
a lollipop or something.
You know what we often do is try to get them to plant new trees. You know, we say, okay, fine, you're going to lose this tree, and this tree is important to you.
Yeah.
Let's just get a new one in. You know, but let's move on.
You find that people have a lot of emotional attachment to their trees?
They're important. It's just like that smell of Christmas or whatever it is, that they're attached to it. It's part of their lives, you know.
You're seeing it every day. You're walking past it every day. Maybe your kids play on it, lean on it.
Stories of kids, you know, climbing trees. People are always telling me, oh, yeah, I climbed my, you know, crabapple tree in the backyard. And, you know, or you go and you see their pictures on the hallway or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's always
the
picture
tree.
Of prom, the picture of whatever of in front of the crabapple tree or the magnolia tree or whatever it is. So,
that's
great
stuff.
There's a strong attachment.
Great stuff. Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
No,
where can people
me.
Find more information about you guys?
DavyTree.com would probably be the easiest way.
DavyTree.com.
Throughout Chicago.
And if you have any questions about your trees, your landscape, Sean is the guy you want to talk to. He can come out and save that ailing tree. Don't give up on the tree.
Exactly.
Never give up on the tree.
Never give up. We'll help you if we can.
We're going to wrap out our Christmas tree segment right now. We're joined by Sean from Davey Tree Experts, and we have a call. Marianne, thanks for holding. You are our last call we're taking on this topic. What's going on?
I have a two-part question. I'll make it real quick.
Sure.
First of all, we always got like a Douglas fir, and I'd have them cut the bottom off, and I'd bring it home right away, and I'd put it in a bucket with warm water. And it always seemed to suck up a lot of water that way, and then I'd put sugar in it and keep it nice and fresh. And I actually had one year little tips. They were green blooms on the tips of all the branches.
It actually started
Christmas
to leaf
tree.
Out?
It did, but I thought
popped.
I couldn't have planted it, right?
No, without a root
wondered.
System. Some plants you can do without or very little root system, but an evergreen tree would not be one that you could.
I didn't
just take
think
the
so.
Stump
I
and
was,
have it
was
grow.
So pretty. I kept it up for a long time because it was so fresh and it had all these little tips that were green. But my other question is this. I bought a tree the one year and I brought it home and did my little trick with the warm water. And the next morning, every single little piece of tree was gone. I mean, it all fell off. Like the Snoopy tree, I mean, it was bare. Every little leaf, I don't know, what do you call it on a fir tree? Not
the
a leaf.
Needle, the needles.
Yeah, the needles. They all fell off. I mean, it was absolutely bare. And I brought it back, and they actually traded me for another one. But do you think it's because I put hot water in the bucket?
Well, the hot water wouldn't necessarily be needed. Cool water is fine. It doesn't. You don't have to thaw the tree out, so to speak. As it starts to come out of dormancy, it'll naturally suck that water up. So the water temperature is not important. You probably didn't do anything to that tree. It takes time for trees to respond. So if all the needles fell off as soon as you got into your home, more than likely something else happened to that tree long before it ever got to your home. It might have had some sort of disease or insect problem.
I thought I put it into shock or something.
You can live now and know that you didn't kill your tree.
You can move on. It's not your fault.
Move on from it, Marianne.
Great.
It's okay. It really
is.
Happy holidays.
Happy.
Have a nice Christmas, guys.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Thanks for calling the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Sean, thank you so much. We appreciate your time and sticking around for that last call.
No
That's
problem.
Good stuff. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to both of you.
All right, we're going to switch gears here, and Andy Mazur is joining us. Let's hear that voice.
Frank, how's it going today?
You know that voice from WGN Sports, WGN Radio Sports. Andy is a you know, well-known talent here at the network. How long have you been here?
Okay, let's see. Off and on, right around 12 years, 13 years, yeah. I took a seven-year hiatus to live in Southern California.
Is that where you picked up your love for photography?
You know, it didn't hurt being out there. This actually started a long, long time ago. My father used to – we had a darkroom in our basement when I was growing up.
Oh, really?
He used to develop black and white film on his own. He had those cameras that you had to look down into.
That you cranked.
That you cranked a little bit. Yeah. And we would go out every once in a while, and I would just, you start to develop an eye kind of thing, is that you like to photograph, and certain lights and certain...
Was that his trade? Like that what he did
no,
for a living?
No, he's a CPA. So sometimes, you know, you have to have that outlet. You know, you have that to have creative outlet in a position. You know, he didn't have a lot of creativity. Otherwise, he would not be a free man. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
Working on books and things. But, you know, he picked it up, and it just kind of transferred. He and I would go out. Even when I lived in California, I would come home and I'd bring my camera, and we would go to the forest preserves, and we would go to some of his favorite spots and crank away, you know, just click, click, click. And it's so much easier now because you don't have to deal with film.
Yeah.
Film still looks better, I think, still than
you do?
Than digital.
There's that age-old debate. Yeah. I mean, it's even better than, like, you know, whatever they, you know, the highest resolution you could possibly get.
It's like the 45 versus the CD. You know, I mean, you grew up with something and you kind of, you're hesitant to let it go and you still think it looks pretty good. But, you know, there's a great thing for amateurs like myself with digital. It's the trial and error. I mean, you can teach yourself as you go, and that's kind of how I do it. I go out and I shoot in only manual mode on my camera now. I've gotten to that point now. I mean,
is that like a badge of honor for me, exactly.
You know, for the amateur. I mean, the pros are out there laughing, going, "Yeah, we've been doing that for years."
But aren't the presets on these cameras almost as miraculous?
Yeah, they are. But I think to me, it's cheating at this point, just because and there's certain things you can do in manual mode that you can't do in some of those preset modes, and it's changed some of the way that the shutter clicks, and sometimes with the amount of light that's coming in, you can set your f-stops and all that kind of stuff. Without getting too technical on it, you can have a little more fun with it, I think.
Where do you think you're going to go with this? I mean, do you feel like this is the next phase of your life and the retirement plan for you?
You know, I'm not stupid enough to think I can get rich doing this, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there, even with an iPhone, the way that the smartphone cameras are made now. I mean, you don't really even need a DSLR like I have, and you can take some really good shots.
You really believe that? Like these, because I got the new iPhone 7.
The 7 Plus actually takes better pictures.
The 7 Plus, yeah.
It's got the two cameras on the back of it, so it's much better than even the 7. But I mean, they're getting to the point where you can, you know, they're shooting more and more megapixels. They're shooting more and more clarity. And there was a guy that did a test on 7 Plus that was shooting an NFL game.
On the 7 Plus?
On the 7 Plus.
Really?
And
could you tell a difference on a side-by-side?
No, the photographs were really good. So
wow.
It's a saturated kind of a market, but, you know, I like to think that some of the things that I take are personal to a lot of people in Chicago, and when I was in San Diego, to a lot of people that were in San Diego. I do a lot of work over at Wrigley. I've been documenting the transition of construction. And
so you're not just shooting sports figures? Cause, I mean,
no,
they,
I don't,
you
I, don't
think...
I try not to, actually.
Good.
I try to get out of that whole thing. I mean, Wrigley's a different animal just because it's so iconic, and there's so many ways you can shoot that place and photograph, even from the outside. I don't even go in. I mean, I don't even use connections to get into the park to shoot any of that. I like the exteriors. I like the walls, the way the lights are at night.
So you just capture the energy and the feeling more so than just
One of the ones I brought in for you today.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
I think you've seen this one.
And folks, you can hop on WGNradio.com/watch and watch us right now, like you're watching internet television. See Andy's beautiful work. He's holding up. What are you holding up?
So this is the shot of the back of Wrigley Field from center field, looking at the Harry Carey statue up toward the scoreboard, and happened to catch the light coming in at the right angle.
Wow.
On my lens, and it made a rainbow that goes from Harry's statue all the way to the top of the scoreboard, kind of like thinking that there might have been some divine intervention.
And this is after the
World Series.
Unfiltered, untouched.
Yeah, I mean, I touched it up a little bit so you could see the rainbow a little bit better. But, you know, I do edit a lot of the photos, but I don't change them all that much, just trying to make them a little clearer. So, I mean, that's kind of the stuff I do at Wrigley, and I've been fortunate enough to be around there for some pretty cool things.
You know, so you got the befores.
Yeah.
You got the middles.
Yeah. I got the marquee coming down last year, and then the marquee going back up last year before. And right after the World Series, I got a bunch of
I'm smelling
of
a book here. Yeah. I'm smelling a book on Wrigley. But hey, don't give it up yet.
I won't give it up yet.
We got to take a quick break. Yeah. We're with Andy Mazur here from WGN Radio Sports, an avid photographer with an awesome retirement plan for photography. We're talking about some photography here. Andy Mazur is joining us from WGN Radio Sports. But we're not talking sports. We're talking about his passion. We're talking about photography, Andy.
Yes.
And beautiful photography.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
We were just admiring your work of Wrigley, and we left off before the news break. We're talking about how your documentation of Wrigley.
Yeah.
And I'm smelling a book. Is this where you're going with this?
You know, I really hadn't thought about it, to be honest with you, because it's just so fun. I don't live too far
So, you know, when I'm not working here, I've got some time, and it's a good place to just to roll to, because there's always something going on over there, especially now that they've won the World Series. There's,
did you document like the life and action around that during those weeks?
Yeah, I didn't go out because I just didn't really want to
fear your life.
Well, not fearing for my life. I just figured if I wasn't going to a game, I would rather just not be around. And plus, I was here, doing a lot of the post game stuff. But I did go there after the Tuesday after they won, the weekend after the parade, and the whole chalk wall was going on over there, and people were penning messages to people. There was like a memorial wall, kind of with some photos of people that didn't make it to see the great event, and it was absolutely so cool to be over there to watch young, old, in between. Kind of, you know, and I penned a message myself to my grandfather who got me into the Cubs, and my dad has a brick out there.
That's cool.
I circled that one and wrote "They did it" underneath there for him, and took a picture of that.
Oh, that's awesome! You just gave me the chills.
Yeah, but it was really neat too, because there were kids that were like 6 or 7 that had no idea what was going on, and they're thinking, "Oh, they win the World Series all the time." and then there were people that were squatting down with pictures of dead relatives that got them into the Cubs and didn't live to see it. And they were taking pictures against the wall with all the chalk on there.
So crazy,
was
isn't it?
It was pretty awesome.
You got some good shots of that?
Yeah, I got some good stuff of that. It goes on.
So are you thinking? You don't want to reveal your idea yet?
It'd be kind of cool. I mean, to do a book. I know there's a lot of Wrigley Field books out there, and
different time, different era.
They're very different. I mean, a lot of people have done them this year, obviously, to try to capitalize upon the fandom and everybody going crazy over the World Series and things of that nature. You know, every photographer, and that's the kind of thing to get out there as well. I mean, every photographer has a different eye.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's different things from different people that you might be able to, you know, get something that you want more than the other person was able to provide you.
And speaking of that, if there's a budding photographer out there, or somebody wants to get into photography, you know, as somebody who's kind of, like you said, done it yourself, what would be some of the first steps you would suggest?
Well, it's an expensive hobby. I mean, if you want to do it right, it's a very expensive hobby. I actually started with one of those little pocket, point and shoot things, little Canon I had. And I was just kind of developing my eye at that point, and I wanted to see if it was something I was really going to be interested in for the long haul, because, you know, sometimes hobbies, you know, go in and out, and, you know, like you turn on the light and then you turn it off and you're done with it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure it was something I wanted to do, and it was certainly something I stuck with. And I bought myself a birthday present when I was working in San Diego, and I have an Nikon D5000, which has since been discontinued. But the models that are around the 5000, 3000. And 7,000 for Nikon are usually good for amateurs, but they're going to cost you some money. And then I went out and got a good lens, which I think is important.
So let's talk about. I mean, not that I want you to divulge how much you spend, but what should somebody be looking at here? Like,
you're looking at between 700 and $1,000 for a good camera.
Right.
I mean, you can get them online. You can get them at good discounts as well. Amazon. I know that that's where I got my lens. I got that at a discount. I have a 28mm to 300mm lens, which gets you pretty close to things, but still pretty good for everyday use.
And how about as far as technique, that doesn't cost you anything? Any tips on just ways to frame things and backdrops and lighting?
You know, you have to be aware, and that starts to develop with the eye. I mean, I kind of look at, I give myself projects now. I give myself the things to do every once in a while, like, I want to really accentuate the foreground. I want the background to be way out of focus, but I want something really nice in the foreground. You know, you can tell what the background is, but your eye is drawn to the foreground. There's a lot of times I'll go out and I'll deal with angles. I want to shoot from the ground up. I want something that's maybe small to look massive.
Mm-hmm.
There's focus things you can do.
Have you shot this Lincoln statue out here?
No, I'm a little afraid of that one. I'm a little weary of that one out there. It might fall on
me. It's kind of intimidating.
Yeah, it looks like Abraham Lincoln and Perry Como.
Who is that, by the way?
I have no clue. I've been asked that 100 times. I have
so
no
weird.
Idea who that is.
Dave, do you know who that is standing next to Lincoln out there?
It's just an ordinary man, and he's getting the Gettysburg Address from Lincoln, former President Lincoln. That's what it is. It's just any man down off the street just
any
getting the
USA.
Gettysburg Address.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess every man wears a nice white sweater and some khakis.
Yeah.
Especially here in Chicago.
Yeah especially here in
when
Chicago.
It's snowing.
Yeah. It's an interesting interpretation of every man.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we
digress.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things you can do. I mean, and I've got some favorite spots in the city that I go to.
Right. Yes, you do. We're being joined with Dr. Joel Ochner right now in studio, and we are talking about, you know, what people usually talk about this time of year, which is the holidays, and sometimes it could be stressful, although it should be joyous and amazing. It sometimes gets stressful, and things can get heated, as well as we tend to, you know, overeat, overdrink, and, you know, it could lead to more serious situations after everything's said and done, and you think that you're, you know, settling down, and you know, all of a sudden you start to feel a little weird, right, Doc? Is this the time of year where you get those calls?
Yeah, people are just stressed out. You know, it's more really, you know, it's a combination. It's financial, it's physical, it's, you know, dealing with relatives maybe they don't want to deal with. It's a whole package.
Yeah.
It is the happiest time of the year. It is a great time of year. I mean, come on, look outside the studio, it's beautiful snow.
It's gorgeous.
Some weird Abraham Lincoln guy, blue Santa Claus.
Right.
It's all good.
It's downtown Chicago,
it
baby.
It's fantastic.
You know, that's what we see here.
But yeah, it is a very stressful time of year. And you know, just like I said before, you have to learn to carve out some time for yourself. Say no, it's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
They call it exercise the no muscle, the psychologists call it. The no muscle.
I'm going to start exercising that.
Yeah, you don't do it at all. You say no. You say yes to everything.
Right? I do. I try. I believe in, you know, just at least trying things once.
Well, I mean, I'm guilty of not saying no enough also. But yeah.
As a parent, though, it's hard to
get pulled in too many different directions. It's one of those things.
We got some folks outside doing
some
fun
cheering.
I love that. What are they saying? All right.
What's he doing?
What is he doing? Ohio State? Is that what we're talking about? Yeah, all right,
Ohio State.
That was a little bit
They beat Michigan 2 weeks ago.
They did.
My alma mater.
God bless them. And we're, you know, if you have questions for the good doc, 312-981-7200 is the number. We're talking about health, diets, and ways to stay, you know, fit during the season. I know it's the last thing people think about, but it's the first thing you should keep in the back of your mind. Let's talk to Linda, who's got a question of skim milk versus whole milk. Hey, Linda, how are you?
Hey, good, thanks. Dr. Ochner, I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist. I've been trying to follow some of the research about dairy products. Some of the research, I believe, is fair, and some probably is influenced by industry. But I tend to lean towards the newer research that's showing that whole-fat dairy isn't as bad for a person as it was formerly thought. And I was just wondering about your opinion on that.
So we're saying, like, no fat milk versus whole milk, right?
Right. It's dairy, too. Like, goes for yogurt or, milk.
And you're
dairy products in general.
And what you're referencing is the new research that says whole milk is better for brain development than overall cardiovascular health, correct?
Yeah, and this new research is showing that whole milk has a different kind of saturated fat. It has a different effect on the fat in your blood, that it's not as likely to deposit in your arteries.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. Well, just to go back, I mean, I know the research you're talking about, and, you know, I would embrace the whole milk. I can't drink it myself. It's like drinking a milkshake for me.
Yeah, I can't either.
But I get what you're saying. But the whole research on the fat, that's a whole new thing. You know, there's a lot of research and a lot of data in 2015 and 16 that say that fat in your diet has nothing to do with heart disease.
You know, yeah. Is that true, Doc?
The American College of Cardiology released a statement in August of last year saying that dietary cholesterol is no longer considered a factor in heart disease. So I called them up. I said, guys, what are you doing? I mean, I've been telling everybody forever, lay off fat. And now they're thinking it's really about inflammation. We talked about this before.
Yeah.
So, you know, can the fat cause inflammation? Yes, but I think it's more going to be, you know, we talked about the chia seeds and the omega-6 versus omega-3. I think it's more of that kind of thing. But, Linda, get back to your question. I think whole milk is probably better. I'd agree with you.
Linda, have you ever read the China study?
No, I haven't.
I would advise picking it up. It's a great book. I've read it, and it was written by a former dairy scientist who grew up in a dairy farm and was paid by major dairy, you know, producing companies for many, many years. And then when he quit, he had too much information that they didn't like. And for many years, he was kept quiet and then finally opened up and wrote this book. And in the book, there's a lot of statements. Okay, because Doc, back me up here. I'm no doctor, but I do claim to know a lot about this stuff because I researched the crap out of it. And as a doctor, he can verify this. The idea that the casein in milk has been proven to cause cancer is what they claim in this book.
I know the claim. I don't know if it's proven by, but okay. I read that. I know what he's referring to. Yes, I've heard that also.
If
also,
further,
and cheese also.
Exactly.
Yes.
And the cheese. And then further, that the dairy, you know, it also causes mucus, and mucus causes inflammation. So, so it's an inflammatory response, right? The body creates mucus from inflammation. Correct?
Dairy causes mucus. I don't know if I agree that mucus causes inflammation. But once you have inflammation, the mucus makes everything worse.
Right.
It's a sort of a cascading event. But dairy definitely is a huge. I mean, if everybody knows that if they're sick at all, lay off anything dairy because the mucus gets crazy. Yeah, you're right.
Which is kind of scary. So, and then Linda, further on that, the raw vegan community believes that if you consume cows, any other milk other than human milk, for like mother's breastfeeding milk, you're consuming the milk of a 1,000-pound animal, and it shouldn't be. Your body does not process it as it would human milk. So their theory is that it definitely should not be in the body, regardless.
You know, I just don't see putting human milk in cereal every morning.
No, I definitely would not do that. Thus, it should be maybe consumed for a certain period of time. I don't know. I'm just throwing out the theories and the research I've seen. Maybe none of it makes sense.
There's a lot out there, and it's confusing. But I would go back to Linda's initial point. I think there's enough to say at this point that whole milk has really got a bad rap for many years, and I think we're going to see more of it. Thanks, Linda, for the call.
Thanks so much.
You got it. Yeah, and we do have some other calls I would love to get to. Let's see. We'll go here with Pat. Pat, what's going on, buddy? How are you? Thanks for calling the show.
Well, you're welcome. I wanted to ask the doctor. I'm a former marathon runner. Due to injuries, I started weight training. I'm 63 years old, and since about the 1st of January, I've been doing a lot of high reps, and my cardio is mostly on a treadmill. I was wondering about the possibility of trying to put on bulk at my age.
Why do you want to? Because you want to be able to lift more, you're saying?
Right. Get stronger.
So you're saying, are you asking, is this good or bad, or is this an option? I'm not sure what the question is.
Oh, the question is at 63 years of age.
Can you do it?
Yes. Should I be doing it?
And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, I wouldn't get crazy. I wouldn't use anabolic steroids, but, you know, if you use heavier weights and less reps, you're going to put on bulk. That's how it goes. So
right.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, I think, truthfully, I think if you, from a health perspective, I think it's much more important for the aerobic component. That's better for, you know, cardiovascular. But then again, I mean, what you like lifting weights. Is it good for your stress? You're like, and do you enjoy it? Why do you do it?
I enjoy it. When I was a marathon, I have a tendency to be obsessive compulsive. So when I start doing something, I go crazy. It took me about a year to qualify for the Boston Marathon when I started running.
Well, but just so you know, 63 is not old. I mean, that's not a red flag to me. I mean, I just think at a number, if you're a healthy 63-year-old and you want to lift weights, go for it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
I agree. Go for it.
63 is nothing. Come on. It's the new 40.
I like that, Doc.
There you go.
Okay, sounds good, Doc.
You got it. Enjoy. All right, Pat, thanks. Go out there and get some of that.
I'm sitting in front of the gym right now.
Do it. Get out of there. Get in there and lift some weights. Just be healthy about it and be conscious. Listen to your body. That's the most important thing. All right, thanks for the call. All right, let's grab another one here. We got Mike. What's going on, buddy? You're against the old give up the carbs rule?
And I don't think this doctor knows enough about nutrition. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I've been studying for the last 5 years. I'm 56 years old. I'll be 57 in January. And I gave up all processed foods. But I can tell you this, good carbs, good fats, and good proteins are essential building blocks to build lean muscle mass. And lean muscle mass is the best fat burner that you can get. But by telling people to give up all carbs completely is ridiculous.
All right,
it doesn't work.
Can I respond, or do you have more to say?
You can respond.
Thanks. First of all, I mean, I applaud the way you're pursuing this. It sounds like you know a lot about what you're talking about. And I hear what you're saying. When I say give up carbs, I'm talking for the average person out there who's not going to start worrying about processed foods and lean muscle mass in general. An easy way to get through this season is to give up carbs. I hear what you're saying. There are some good ones, and processed food is an issue. I mean, you're right. I mean, your 5 years of experience, you know, I don't know. It sounds okay. I mean, it sounds like you're really interested in what you're doing, and I really applaud what you were saying. But I was trying to give more of a generic response to Chicagoland. That's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah, but can I respond too?
Please, sure. That's an open forum.
If someone eliminates all carbs, they're going to desire carbs even more. if they eat the good carbs in moderation with good proteins and fats, you're going to satiate yourself and you're
Mike,
not going to be hungry.
Mike, what do you consider a good carb in your expertise of 5 years?
Well, vegetables are a good carb. That's one thing. A sweet potato with nothing on it, a quarter of it. There's so many nutrients in a sweet potato, it's incredible. And even an organic regular potato, you just can't eat all the starchy stuff. Breads are the worst. If you want to say give up white flour, I totally agree with you. If you got to have bread, go to Ezekiel.
How about soybean? How about soybean products? What do you think of those?
I eliminated all soy and dairy from my diet. Although I do eat 2% low fat, not non-fat. I don't do any non-fat.
You're saying makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you want to get more specific, you know, sweet potatoes are very good for you. I don't know about the regular potatoes. Yes, there are some good carbs, but in general, I'm going to stick by what I say for 90% of humanity. It's a better way to go because people are not going to start looking into the nuances, Mike. That's all it is. But you know, with your 5 years.
You're right. But they're never going to learn how to introduce good carbs to their diet.
But they're not interested in learning. You got to miss. That's my
well, point. And Mike, in specific, Mike, you know, I think the topic is skewed towards the inflammatory effect of carbohydrates. And I don't think the body discerns whether it's a starch from, you know, multiple sources.
I agree with you.
And further, you know, I have lived pretty much carb free for, gosh, 6 years. I don't crave it. I don't miss it. If you replace it with good fats, like avocados, salmon, fish oils, all that kind of stuff, you do go into what, you know, you're familiar with the term ketosis. You know, it's close to a state of ketosis, and your body learns how to process without carbohydrates. And I don't know, for me, I feel great about it, and I guess teach his own, and, you know, occasionally I do love a good sweet potato, and I'll take it in, and I just, you know, it's more of a general concept of, you know,
I got two real quick points because I know you got to go. Okay. I agree with you about dairy. Dairy is an inflammatory, and they do say that aged cheese is better than like regular Colby Jack or something like that. So if you're going to do a Gran Padano Parmesan, that's good. But as far as diets, they don't work. If you change, like what you said, you've done it for 6 years, and that's what I've done for the past five. And I never thought I'd get a six-pack, and anyone can get one, whether they're 9 or 90. It all starts in the kitchen. But, yes, I do work out. I do CrossFit and all this crazy stuff. But
let's hear from – we have another caller, Mike, Lisa, who's lost 135 pounds with no carbs. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Great. I should preface this by saying that I did it – I was on heavy-duty steroids. I have rheumatoid arthritis.
Okay.
And, you know, I was completely unresponsive to any of the medications. If you've seen a commercial for them, been there, done that. And so by changing my diet, went, you know, completely the opposite direction, got rid of all carbohydrates, got rid of all sugar. Sugar has not passed through my system unless it's less than 4 grams in something, and that's even a lot for me. Like in yogurt, I do eat dairy, but I only eat whole milk dairy. I don't do, you know, skim milk. I only do full fats, and I didn't do it as in, you know, the Atkins way. That's not what I was going for. I was looking to remove anything inflammatory from my body, and lean proteins, you know, lean fish, a lot of exercise. And I've been in remission now since March.
Good for you.
That's incredible.
That's huge. That's a massive amount of weight to lose, and that's great.
I lost a person, you know, I have never felt better, and I will never. Their carbohydrates just don't pass through my lips. They do not. Will I eat green beans and soybeans? Yeah, I do. I do. I love my edamame. But I'm careful. I don't eat squashes. I don't eat, you know, the yellow, more carby type vegetables.
Yeah.
You know, and quite frankly, I had some corn at Thanksgiving, and it was like, you know.
Lisa, can I ask you a question? So you were on heavy duty steroids. Was a lot of that weight was from the steroids, I'm guessing, correct?
It was. But eventually, because we're talking 9 years at 60 milligrams of prednisone a day, plus IV Decadron once a month.
Lisa lost 135 pounds with no carbs. We were just talking about this with Dr. Oakner. And, Doc, you had a question for Lisa right before the break.
from their steroids,
about the
correct?
Prednisone, yes.
Right.
Yes. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. When you're on them for that many years, yes, you put on a lot of weight from the steroids. But after so many years, the weight is yours. It doesn't matter where it came from.
This
it's yours.
True. You own it. Yeah.
You own it. It was horrible.
So, Lisa, let me ask you a question since, you know, sure. This is radio. How high did your weight get and how tall are you?
I'm 5'5", and I was 272.
Wow. So you're down to what?
What are you?
I bounce back and forth between 135 and 137 now.
Wow. It's a small range. That's amazing. I mean, it took a lot of work, but I'm very impressed. Very impressed.
Thank you. And listen, and I ran the 15K hot chocolate this year.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Lisa. You know, so it's just been an amazing thing. But the fact that I no longer suffer from the RA, that's what it was all about.
What do you do attribute that to mostly? Not the medicine, obviously. It's more your diet, correct?
Absolutely. And I never bought into that whole thing when I was first sick. You know, it was IV this, IV that, shooting up with methotrexate once a week. You know, it was the whole thing.
Right.
And, you know, I got my life back.
I think you're amazing because I think if people can control a lot of the disease processes with diet. So Lisa, fantastic.
Yeah, great job, Lisa.
Thank you
so much and have a great holiday.
Thank you, guys, too. Take care.
All right.
Speaking of holiday, guys, we got our second winner for our tree, our best tree. It was very hard because you had to pick amongst a lot of the texters, but the one that had their grandchildren pictures throughout the whole tree, Chuck and Alice, is the winner.
Nice. There you go. Congratulations. You got yourself a Lightkeeper Pro too. Dr. Oakner, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure. For you.
It is. Where can people find you, buddy?
Probably just OaknerCardiology.com.
OaknerCardiology.com.
Yeah.
There you go. Doc, thank you so much.